heart and soul of a nation, beckons the call. The voice of our forefathers heard in the distance.
A house divided against itself cannot stand.
To reclaim our honor.
Our soul. The challenges of a generation call out. Future generations hang in the balance. We choose liberty. This is the voice of a nation.
The nation.
And now, Malcolm.
Well, you may have been seeing some of these reports, possibly, that President Trump is concerned for the impeachment, more so than, of course, why shouldn't he be concerned, you might ask, but more so that it is a scar on his record, sort of a blemish for the work that he's doing and his legacy. And, you know, as every president is concerned, because, you know, this is it's a call to action. It's a worldly order to be president. It's not something that many of us get the opportunity to do when you consider there's only been 45 in the history of our nation. It's a select few who get to serve as the commander-in-chief of the armed forces and the leader of the free world. And that's where we sit today, friends, with Donald J. Trump, 45th president of the United States, and one that they are circling the wagons quickly to try to remove him from office. So you might begin to ask yourself, why? Why is that? Why is Donald Trump such a scare to the entire establishment? Now, I've been talking to you for quite some time about this, clearly, and Trump is not a typical, he's not a politician at all, which is why you're seeing a lot of the other decisions he's making, which I've been talking to you about in recent days, even with a lot of the strategic decisions in war. He looks at them from a business standpoint, an economic standpoint, and a patriot standpoint, and many other ways, but very seldom does he look at these things from a political standpoint. Now, friends, that is different. That is highly unique in today's polarized world. So now you have a politician, non-politician, who is at the helm here. That makes the entire apparatus quaking in their boots, nervous as hell. And now you hear the phrase often said, deep state. What is the deep state? I want to circle that a little bit to you today about this deep state business. What is it really on both sides of that conversation? Let's discuss who that is, what that is. But also, it's really more so the players that have been around a long time, the establishment. You hear the words establishment. What does that mean? Well, you know, sadly, it's people that are there forever, which is another argument we could have here as to why we need term limits, people would argue, right? Do we need term limits? When they're leaving Congress in wheelchairs and oxygen tanks, you have to begin to question yourself, are we leaving them in there too long? So the president held a phone call just this past week here with the House Republicans specifically. And by the way, Axios was the first to report this, and now it's been in multiple reports now, that he said that, and I quote, these are their words, "It's a bad thing to have on your resume." Now, you know darn well President Trump wants a good, clean resume. The man is very self-reflective, let's say, to put it mildly, right? He's very conscious about who he is and his record. So he says to the Republicans in the House and others, it's a bad thing to have on your resume. And because they have probably been telling the president, it will be okay, we have your back, Mr. President. And of course, you've seen the Senate President Mitch McConnell come out in recent days here and say, yep, the trial will be very quick and swift in the Senate, no problem. We've got it, Mr. President. By obligation, he has to do that. But by obligation, they are not going to play. He creates the rules, basically, McConnell does. So that's what will happen. You have to do it, but there are no rules as to how you have to do that. Just keep that in mind, people, okay? So the president in that phone call to the Republican leadership went on to say that it's going to make Kevin Speaker, speaking of McCarthy. Now, of course, Kevin was in that position before Ryan became the speaker, and he stepped down for other political reasons. Now the president, you know, being the minority leader, he referenced that it's going to make his, meaning that the Republicans are going to win the House back, the president thinks. Now, what I'm speaking to you about now is called inside baseball, basically. But it's their feelings that this impeachment trial and what's going on and what the establishment is trying to do and remove the president, that it will unsettle most of America and middle America, and that they will come out in droves to reelect this president and give him a mandate is what they're hoping for. That's the conversation we're going to have here ahead in the weeks and months ahead here as the 20 election comes on, people. You know, that's going to be it in a nutshell. Part of the problem is Nancy Pelosi, the speaker, does not want to have a vote. She's holding that off. And part of the strategy is because she doesn't want to put everybody on a count. And so because there are a lot of players that are up for election that are in districts that Trump has won. So she wants to leave that off the record a little bit. Here's what I would say more than anything I want to share with you today. I would say to Mr. President, if I would speak to him and sit down with him at this moment and have a strategy session with him, I would say, Mr. President, this so-called impeachment that they are circling the wagons with, and certainly the House of Representatives appears to be in the mode of trying to pull off here because it looks like they will have the votes. You really need to look at this as a badge of honor. Because just by the president's, by number 45 in the historical records here, will be a lot of asterisks with by the name Donald J. Trump. There will be a whole series of asterisks because he's historic in nature, what's happening here. And I would say one of those asterisks, people, will be a badge of honor. And I say that because, well, people, the fact that he's gone after this deep state and the establishment hook, line, and sinker, and the fact that they are quaking in their boots is reason enough to have this impeachment to be considered a badge of honor. So I would argue with you that I don't think it's a scar, I don't think it's a stain, and I don't think it's an issue. I think the president just needs to know that wear it as a badge of honor, Mr. President. You're in very elite company. And more so, that'll be those asterisks that the American people had your back. And if 2020 goes the way you think and the way you spoke to the Republicans and the leadership, then by far and large, it will be a badge of honor. And that's where we'll start today, people, in this talk here. I'd like to welcome on and bring on to the program here a friend of the program we haven't had on in some time, but happy to have Dr. James Mitchell is here. And Dr. James Mitchell was involved in the development. He was the, many people called him the architect, actually. He's very modest, so he may have a different way of looking at this stuff, but he was involved in the development of the CIA's Enhanced Interrogation Program. His book, Enhanced Interrogation, you remember back in that day, people, about the waterboarding and the controversy with the senior detainees in Gitmo. And, well, Dr. Mitchell was at the center of all of that. And the point of this is he's dealt with Congress at their lowest point. This was back just in the Obama, early Obama years now, and actually just prior to that. We're talking 2007, 2008, right in that range of time. He had a lot of involvements here with Congress, to say the least here, and has gone probably, I would say, Jim, you've probably gone full throttle and eye to eye with, as we call, the deep state. Jim, when we use the words deep state today, a lot of people hear those words and they don't really know. But when I think of the deep state, it's really, I look at it as the establishment, kind of painter wallpaper that's been around for 100 years, and it's hard to peel it off the wall, buddy, or you almost have to blow the wall up to restart. It's almost like that's the establishment. What's the deep state mean to you, Jim? When you hear deep state, what is it?
Well, a lot of things spring to mind. Well, first, thanks for having me on. A lot of things spring to mind. You know, I spent a little bit of time in and out of Washington, and one of the things I was told by some of the folks there is that the president really is transient management, and that their primary concern is to hold things together until that person is no longer in office. Mm. So there is this sort of undercurrent of, who is this guy? He's not going to be here for very long. He's not one of us. So what we have to do is protect our little fiefdom. And what you have is you have this, it's almost like a career path where people get elected to Congress and they come in making a few hundred thousand dollars and they leave millionaires. And then when they go when they leave, they either go to the media or they go to some sort of a firm that's trying to purchase or purchase influence or provide access to, you know, to businesses that want to do business in Congress. So what Trump is doing is Trump is really in there kind of upsetting the apple cart. He's drawing attention to this career path is what I called it. But basically, it's this series of little fiefdoms where bureaucrats who are dug in like ticks and have been sort of sucking like parasites on the tax dollars feel threatened because what he wants to do is expose them and, to the extent possible, get rid of that. Now, it's some people would call that corruption, but in our country, that sort of thing, including the sort of nepotism that you saw with Biden, is considered legal in some circles. What's considered dangerous is drawing attention to that and wanting to stop that, because more than just getting rid of the person's personal power in the moment, that cuts into the whole way that this thing that you're referring to as the deep state progresses and moves along.
Yeah, that is well said. I mean, your explanation is perfect. The parasites, the ticks, I love it. I love it. Sucking onto all of Washington. And the career path, that's a good way to put it as well, Jim, because you know, I've been saying for years, I just think we're so overdue to term limits. But of course, they're not gonna vote term limits in because it impacts themselves. So there was word that Cruz was working on that, some sort of legislation recently. But don't you think it's time for term limits?
Well, I mean, we've toyed with that. I think it's a mixed bag. The problem is that the system is so complicated that you need some kind of knowledge. And if what you do is you make the elected folks have term limits, then the bureaucracy becomes stronger, right? Because because elected folks who come in naive have to rely on the bureaucracy. And so I think what you would see is although I'm in favor of term limits, don't get me wrong, I think in general, the idea sounds like a good idea, but I can foresee the possibility that the bureaucracy just becomes stronger and then more and more people just become transient managements. You know, they tell that person what they need to know. They influence that. That's why Trump is so dangerous to them. He actually goes by his own thoughts. He has these people who tell him, you know, what the deep state would like him to do. And if it sounds like it's not consistent with the promises he made to the voters or to what he knows as a person who has dealt in the past with making big deals, he just doesn't do it. And that upsets those bureaucrats who would have even more power if we had strict term limits.
Don't you think middle America wakes up in the morning? I know you and I probably do. And we look at the headlines, Jim, and knowing Trump and describing him the way you just did, don't you think that middle America, that's the reason the nation is behind him? They see a lot of this. I mean, people who pay attention, at least, see a lot of this, and they see what's going on. And when we wake up in the morning, we see the headlines of what's happening. You must chuckle. I mean, don't you kind of chuckle to yourself sometimes when you see some of the things that are going on and how these parasites and ticks, again, are reacting? The fact that they're being tossed off the victim.
I see. Yeah. Well, here's what I think. I mean, I think the takeaway for anybody watching what's playing out in the political machinations that are taking place in Washington is that the elected elite think that you're stupid. They think that the average American voter, those of us who are out on the fringes in flyover land, are stupid. And all you have to do is look at what they're trying to do to the president. You know, the Democrats are in the House. He's been accused by an anonymous snitch who alleges crimes that didn't occur and that the person has no direct knowledge of. The president can't confront him. The identity and political leanings of the person were attempted to keep secret. They're keeping secret his identity. Their investigations were started without following established protocols. The president's assumed guilty until he can prove his innocence. If you look at the sort of things that Schiff said when he opened that one public hearing that occurred, what you get is you get this idea that that he just makes this stuff up, and he gets to control it. It's almost like a totalitarian secret trial, you know, that it's taken place in the Intelligence Committee in the House so that the public can't have access to it. Trump can't know who's testifying against him. He can't do anything to push back against that. And this is the sort of thing that happens in communist dictatorships and totalitarian things. And I don't think the American voter ought to stand for it.
Yeah, no, it's a banana republic concept, totally. I've been seeing reports in the last few days, Jim, where they are steadfast on leaving this whistleblower. They don't want even the Republican politicians to be able to even talk to this person. They want to have him sort of like behind the glass, behind the blindfold, behind the something to protect. His identity is what they're saying or whatever. Now they say there's a second one and all of that, but you're so right when you point out. But you know, let's look at this thing, though, Jim.
Because it's almost like a Rorschach test, one of those inkblot tests, in that it tells you more about what's going on in the minds of his accusers than it does what's actually there. You know, they're asking us to believe that they know he's guilty and that they have some kind of a magic ability to read between the lines of what was actually said on that phone call, even though it's clear for anyone to read that what they're claiming happened didn't happen, and that they can somehow divine Trump's motives and intents. And, you know, as a psychologist who spent years profiling, among other things, war criminals and other, all sorts of bad guys, it's a clear sign that they're overly fixated on him. You know, there's an old saying that my grandmother used to use, and it's a trite saying, but I think it's a real saying, which is give a two-year-old a hammer and the whole world's a nail. And I think that that's what's happened to the Democrats. They've got this sort of bloodlust to impeach Trump, and everything Trump does is a crime if they just look hard enough and search hard enough and spin it that way.
Isn't that the same thing they did to Kavanaugh?
It is the same thing they did to Kavanaugh and continue to try to do to Kavanaugh.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, and it's always in search of a crime. That's the thing. It's always a guilt. And it just goes against American principles, Jim. I mean, it's so far-fetched.
Yeah. They want to convict on the severity of the allegation and not on the evidence.
It's amazing. It's absolutely mind-blowing. To your point a few moments ago, I want to bring up something. I don't know if you've seen this, Jim, at all, but I want to talk about this just after a quick pause here. But interestingly enough here, the New York Times, and the last few days, a columnist came out and admitted the deep state existed. But here's what's interesting. They laid out the reason the deep state exists, and they lay it out in a very interesting fashion that I think sort of plays to what you just said when you described the parasites and the ticks or what they think, although they have a different way of looking at it, back to psychology and what you were just saying, back to psychology. We'll pick that up in just a moment.
The silent majority has spoken. We say, let the silent voices be heard. You can be the voice of change. Contact our producer at liberty@americaoutloud.com. liberty@americaoutloud.com.
Think back to the last time you felt healthy and energized. The best times of our lives occur when we're at the peak of our health, sleeping better, full of energy and focus. We know that fades with age, and you might be feeling the effects of aging as low energy and poor sleep. But it doesn't have to be that way. There haven't been any nutrition systems designed to rejuvenate our bodies as we get older, until now. Healthy Cell Pro is the only multi-nutrient system that impacts the building block of your body, the cell. Created by anti-aging expert and Nobel Prize nominee, Dr. Vincent Giampapa, award-winning Healthy Cell Pro cuts through the complexity of nutrition supplements by simply giving you the purest ingredients, filling dietary gaps to nourish your cells and enhance your quality of life for optimal performance. Visit HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for an exclusive discount or call 844-869-9958.
Most of the media elites and most of the political establishment never want to talk about a deep state that is sort of that's anti to everything that they think they're about. And so they don't ever, when those words come up, you know, it's like, oh, what do you mean? It doesn't exist. It's in your imagination. It's a conspiracy. Well, they had a piece out last few days and others here, and it reads this way: to protect us from Trump, And this is why they say the deep state exists. And so there was they were on the Today Show. He says, by hailing bureaucrats undermining the Trump administration as noble. Now, noble public servants, what you just described, actually. So he believes they are noble public servants protecting the Constitution in their mind and the American people from the president. And he denounced any criticism of the deep state as very dangerous. He puts out there that the deep state is very proper. And their job is to these noble public servants, as you called it, Jim, you actually described it perfectly just moments ago here, that their job is to protect the Constitution and the American people from the president. This is the guy who was duly elected, who the country elected to head up the country and gave the keys to an unknown, obviously, somebody that was outside of the political establishment. And, of course, they're having a shit fit because of that. What do you say to that with this columnist coming out and finally admitting, hey, there is a deep state, but here's what his description of a deep state is?
Well, I'm not surprised that he had put the most noble spin, because he needs to frame it in a way that justifies this kind of madness. You know, somewhere between restarting every 4 years and having a bureaucracy that's dug in so deep that they, you know, essentially ignore the people voters select to lead them, there has to be a happy medium. I mean, you don't want a government to reinvent itself every 4 years. You don't want them to try to figure out how to set up diplomatic relations because everybody is new that comes in there. The problem with having political leaders who appoint folks who get dug in as much as Obama's folks did is that they then, the president, when you bring him in, if he's a person like Trump, has to overcome the riptide of those folks trying to move them in directions that are consistent with whatever their original political goals are. You know, it's, I think a good example of that is, you and I were talking before we went on the air about those CIA officers who claim to be whistleblowers. But, you know, my reaction to that is, since when is it okay for a serving CIA officer to moonlight as a freelance political saboteur for the Democrats who want to impeach Trump? You know, the activities of the CIA are governed in part by an executive order and by the guidelines that come out of the Attorney General's office. And in those guidelines, it says that the collection, retention, and dissemination by CIA officers of information on U.S. persons is permissible only under a narrow band of possibilities. And primarily, it's got to be an official CIA mandate, a job, you know, an official CIA duly authorized collection thing. Well, it seems to me that you've got a CIA officer, and maybe more than one, who on their own decided to collect a dossier on the president and then conspired with the Democrats in the House to make it appear that he was a whistleblower, when in fact the first thing he did was go to them and leak his concerns, and they worked with him to put a fig leaf to camouflage the obscenity of what he was actually doing. You know, and then he worked with what apparently is the intelligence community's IG to fudge on the dates of the whole thing in order to make it look like he had met the requirements for being a whistleblower, when in actually he doesn't, you know, or he did not. So it appears that, you know, that they aren't remaining apolitical. And it goes back to what I was saying. When is it okay? You know, if they've got the free time and the resources to moonlight as political saboteurs and a coup to take down the president, maybe they've got too many people. Maybe they've got too much money. Maybe they've got too much free time, because they want to use this not for jobs that are part of the CIA's mandate, but for their own political desires, and they want to use taxpayers' money to do it. And I think that's just wrong.
Well, they've been weaponized. It's totally been weaponized is the word, Jim. And, you know, Jim, think about it in this way here. It just came to me as you were talking, you mentioned the CIA. You know, I think it's fair to say, and you tell me you agree or disagree with any of this, but I believe the intelligence agencies changed a lot under the Obama administration as a whole. Government agencies changed a lot. I mean, that 8 years was... That was major. Well, back to what he promised, transformation. He actually transformed a lot of things that people didn't give that president credit for in a weird sort of way. Obviously, the country has changed a lot this century since 9/11 and since a lot of the intelligence that the NSA was really came into power, and a lot of the intelligence with the Patriot Act and a lot of other things changed the way we do business here in the States. Now, if you remember when Trump became president, one of the first visits he had was to the CIA. That was one of, and but if you also remember, Jim, Chuck Schumer, he said that be careful, President, how you talk to and how you deal with the intelligence agencies, because they'll come back to get you. And he said that more than once, by the way. So now the question is, should we really be surprised that a lot of these career path driven people that are politicized, and they've been weaponized, again, let's use the word weaponized, they've been weaponized, and all these intelligence agencies were weaponized heavily under the Obama administration. And now here we are, and one of the biggest problems he had from day one, sir, is that was these leaks and these problems and people trying to beset his agenda and trying to take him down from day number one. Many of us thought he'd never get through that chapter, and here we are today. It's coming back to haunt him with a possible impeachment trial here.
Just to be honest with your listeners, I am a big fan of the CIA. My experience with the, you know, the rank and file and the career professionals is that they're all good people. And I'm a huge fan of Gina Haspel, who's the current CIA director. Mm-hmm. What I'm not a fan of is the politicization of individual CIA officers who take it on themselves to advance their own political agenda. We need an agency, and we need one that has some folks with knowledge, long-time knowledge, because the world is sometimes an evil place, and it's often a confusing place, and so we need to be able to collect intelligence, and you can't just go down to Walmart and round up 100 people and get them to do it, right? But with that comes this sort of double-edged sword where they feel empowered and entitled to do different sorts of things. One thing they should not feel entitled to do is spy on the President of the United States and then pretend that they aren't doing it. What bothers me about what the Democrats are doing, and this is, you know, it's an Alinsky kind of, you know, the in his book, Rules for Radical, he talks exactly about how to do this. And you see that that's what they do. You know, they make these wild allegations that on the surface sound horrible. And then that what they do is they just continue to push the lie, and they take things out of context, and they spin it in the worst possible way. And they try to get people to come forward to back up those lies with other allegations. And the last thing they want to do is have a public airing of the actual facts, because that doesn't fit their agenda. But I think that the voters of the United States should just, you know, for lack of a better term, give them the finger and reelect Donald Trump, because he's going to do what he can do to clear this stuff up.
Yeah, that's what do you think about you mentioned Gina Haspel. You know, she's been quiet through all this, with all of this happening. We haven't heard from her in some time. Why
is they're in a box, really, because the federal laws on whistleblowers, as long as that person has the, you know, the fig leaf of legitimacy for being a whistleblower, which is why they did what they did, right? It's why the Democrats and the House Intelligence Committee did what they did. She's really not in a position to root around too much into what's going on, because that person actually has more rights and protection than the people that they were accusing, you know. And
so they're using the coat of that title, but Jim, they're really not a whistleblower. You know that they're a leaker. Or
exactly. Exactly. Well, leaker is probably a better term. And if they were participating in a coup to take down the President of the United States, which it may be looked at later on as just that, then, you know, some people would say that it was seditious activity at best and traitorous activity at worst. And I think what's going to happen, though, is if, you know, Rush Limbaugh said that they really don't want this to go to trial in the Senate, because right. If they do, then these witnesses, these whistleblowers, are going to become public, because you can't. That isn't held in secret. So, you know, I think they're going to try to slow roll this thing. And although they want to smear the president, they want to bring down his public approval. One of the other things that they want to do is drag this thing out through the election so that people may not want to vote for him. But there was another thing that they're trying to do with these so-called subpoenas. And that is that what they want to do is oppositional research on the president with these subpoenas at the taxpayer's expense. They want to essentially go through his underwear drawer so that they can find something that they can take out of context and misconstrue and spin in a negative way and use that against him in the election. And they want to do it in the guise of doing their patriotic duty to protect the American people, when in fact what they're doing is walking all over the Constitution because they're not following the proper procedures. And what I would encourage voters to do, if you are in the sound of my voice and you are one of those people who voted for a Democrat in the House of especially if it's a red state, you should vote those people out and vote a Republican in. And I know, I'm an independent. I'm not a Republican. Sometimes you have to hold your nose and vote for the Republicans. They may not do everything you want them to do, but they are not going to turn this into a socialist dictatorship where they tell you what you can eat with, what you can eat, what you can wear, what pronouns you have to use, or they're not going to mortgage your children's future to try to reduce the temperature 0.5% 100 years from now.
Can you believe we're actually having those kinds of conversations today at the water cooler, Jim?
No, I can't believe we're having those conversations. You know, I'm a firm believer that that climate changes and that it goes through cycles. And some of those cycles are 11 years long and some of those cycles are 10,000 years long, right? But this notion that the U.S. is going to, the human beings are going to somehow be destroyed if the water in Miami comes up 6 inches on the beach is ridiculous. Human beings have been around for at least 100,000 years, maybe longer in our current form. And we live through comet strikes. We live through a situation when most of the United States or North America was covered by glaciers, and then there was a comet strike, and then most of it was on fire, and yet human beings survived that. If we can survive a continent-wide fire and floods that were 1,000 feet deep in the western parts of the United States, like Washington State and Oregon, we can certainly survive the water coming up 6 inches in Miami and a couple of degrees centigrade over 100 years. It's just a ridiculous notion.
Yeah, this is a topic we circle the wagons with all the time on the platform, and we have a couple of brilliant scientists who are regular contributors, Dr. Jay Lair, Tom Harris, and others, and I know a lot of listeners read them faithfully, Jim, every week there, and they pull up a lot of the points that you talk about. Yeah, climate change is true. It really does change. Climate has always changed, but that's not, that doesn't mean it's a problem.
Well, the human
business
contribution is almost non-existent.
It's non-existent. It does not impact it. The climate's going to change because the climate's going to change. It's been changing since the beginning of time, and it's going to continue to do that. And
the suggestion that you need to put mufflers on cows is just so ridiculous. It tells you everything you need to know about their thinking. They think you're stupid.
That's exactly it. They think they're stupid. That's very much it. Jim, you said something a bit ago here that I want to circle back with here, because with everything that's happening right now and the signs that we're seeing where they've gone after the president in such a historical way, you know, I say to folks all the time, Jim, we're living through historical times. We will look back at this point of time years down the road, 20 years from now, even as soon as that, but certainly 30, 40 years from now. And we're living in historical moment of time for this nation. It's quite fascinating, really. I mean, that we're here and we are seeing it all live here. It's amazing. But is this straight out with what's happening right now and everything you've assessed and watching this from afar, but yet knowing the makeup of this, Jim, is this a coup d'etat?
Well, I think it's certainly an effort to impeach the president. And I think it is an effort on the part of the Democrats to have. They wanted to shame him into leaving like they did Nixon. Right. And he didn't do that because that's not who Trump is, you know, and that surprised them. And then once they get involved in this thing, here's the problem is I used to be a hostage negotiator. And one of the things that you had to worry about is whether or not the bad guy got himself in a situation where he couldn't save face, because they have to save face in some cases in order for the thing to be resolved without violence. And And so you have guys like Schiff who have made so many ridiculous claims and lied so often in public that there's no way for him to go, oh, well, we made a good shot at it. It's not going to work. It looks like I was wrong. He can't save face that way. So he has to continue to press this thing forward. And it's also consistent with what Pelosi and the other Democrats in Congress want to do in terms of smearing Trump in the eyes of the voter. What I suggest is that the voters recognize that that's exactly what they're trying to do. They think you're stupid. They think that just because they say he committed a crime on a phone call that you can actually read the transcript for and see that he did not say what they claim he says, right? They just think you're stupid enough to believe them and not believe your lying eyes.
But Jim, nothing else has worked. They've tried every. You've got to give them A for effort, though. I mean, they're trying everything. I mean, what this is this a Hail Mary? Is this their Hail Mary?
I think it is. It's a little bit like the Hail Mary they had when they were confirming Kavanaugh, where they brought in these people that said he was spiking drinks and he had rape trains and that he was, you know, essentially kidnapping people and just absolutely ridiculous things. And so, rather than wanting to actually look at the evidence, which they didn't have any of, what they wanted to do was say, well, these are horrible accusations, and on the basis of the accusation alone, we should get rid of him. Well, anybody can make an accusation, you know?
Jim, and the word, I'm just dying here. Listen, to, you know, the worst part of this, though, Jim, is a lot of people believe this stuff.
Well, that's what they count on. Again, they think you're too stupid to recognize that when somebody says that sort of, they think you won't go, they want to, MSNBC, NBC, ABC, CBS, CNN want to pre-digest the news for you and frame it in a way that leads you to take the actions that they want you to take. They have an algorithm. It's fear and hope. They want to induce fear in you and the hope that if you do what they want you to do, then things will get better. And it's all just a crock.
Oh, my God. How do you say it any better than that, people, you know? And I love the way Dr. Mitchell brings up their algorithm. One of my favorite words in the universe, algorithm. I love algorithms. My definition of an algorithm is when they tighten the screws up just a little bit where you say, ow, ow, that hurts like hell. Sure, stop.
Listen to Malcolm, the voice of a nation, on iHeartRadio or our free apps on Apple, Android, or Alexa.
It's your news and entertainment network. News blogs, informative podcasts, entertaining videos, or listen to 24/7 talk radio on our free apps on Apple, Android, or Alexa. We the people, AmericaOutloud.com is the voice of liberty and justice for all. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio. Well, listen, there was a tweet put out by President Trump here that says this: there are no felonies. There are no impeachable offenses. The Constitution's very clear that you need bribery, treason, or other high crimes and misdemeanors. And you can't be impeached for the conduct that's been alleged in this case. And that was said. Now, what he did is the president retweeted that message came from Alan Dershowitz. Is where that came from, and that's who he referenced that, which the president's very good at that, as you see all the time, Jim, when he sends tweets or messages out of what other people are saying, that he just retweets them out. That's the power of social media. All of a sudden, we talk about the Hail Marys in the last segment, and we talk about the, you know, this deep state as a whole, kind of what's going on. We've never seen a president ever elected, Jim. I don't think, well, maybe you can tell me differently, but certainly in my lifetime, you tell me if it's your lifetime, I don't think we've ever seen a president elected who has followed through on campaign promises in the way that this man is. He's so worried about his word and what he gave his word to the American people. Whatever the situation is, he always goes back to his promises that he gave to the American people. You know, Jim, I'm going to say to you something here. There's something most honorable and noble about that you just don't get in today's but politics. Like him or love the decision is not what I'm talking about, but the fact that he does what he says he's going to do.
Yeah, I don't remember the specific details of it, but at one point in the past, say a decade or maybe a decade and a half ago, a group of voters tried to sue one of the people they elected to office because they weren't keeping their campaign promises. And the court ruled that no one really believed that they were going to keep those promises, you know, and that was just to position them to get the votes. And so they weren't really under any obligation to keep it. And one of the things I really like about Trump is that he keeps his promises. He said he was going to get us out of these wars where we're primarily, you know, doing police actions. And I feel for the Kurds. The Kurds have been good friends to us. But what he did really was just shift 50 military folks out of harm's way. And he made clear that if the Turks did something to the Kurds that were beyond what he thought was reasonable, that he would take financial sanctions against them that would hurt their economy. So it's not like he's abandoning them completely. He's just not wanting to use our military as a police force for the rest of the world. And I don't blame him for doing that. That's one of the things he promised. He promised that he would drain the swamp, that he would look at corruption, that he would do something about the border, and that he would do something about our economy, that he would, you know, work on jobs. And he's done virtually everything that he's claimed, or a lot of what he's claimed that he was going to do, in spite of the fact that he's swimming against the tide. He's swimming against this riptide that's trying to essentially, because if he'd have came into office and shut up and just did whatever the deep state folks wanted him to do, they wouldn't be after him now. They're after him now because what they want to do is they want to rob the Americans of the president that they voted for, who is trying to keep his promises. You know, he's trying to fulfill the promises he made to the voters when they voted him in. And the folks who don't like that. I remember when Mitt Romney was a Republican. I don't know what he is now, but he's not a Republican. You know, I think he's a progressive in the same way that John McCain was a progressive. They ran as a Republican because you can't get elected as a Democrat where they're running. But they're really progressives who are part of this whole deep state process and part of this whole global economy thing, which essentially has the U.S. Funding the rest of the world. And so what I like about Trump is that he's putting American citizens first. He's putting America's safety first. He's putting American jobs and economy and healthcare and all that sort of stuff first. And it really irritates those people who want to have an international, they want to have international access to funds. Right, they want to have people from all over the world paying them tiny bits of money and speaking fees and all of that sort of stuff. And what Trump is doing is they can't deliver on those deep state promises that they've made to these other countries who have been sort of funding their movement from getting a few hundred thousand dollars a year to being multimillionaires. And that's troubling to him.
It sure is. They're losing control, Jim, is what they're doing. They're losing control.
Well, it's a little bit. Here's what I would say to your listeners. You know, in the old days, there used to be Coke machines, and you'd put your 50 cents or a dollar or $2 or whatever it was in a Coke machine. And if the Coke doesn't come out, if it gets stuck, people don't walk, you know, shrug and walk away from the Coke machine.
We kick the machine
for a little while. And what's happening right now in the deep state is they're kicking the machine because they're hoping that the soda falls. And that's what they're trying to do. They think that the American voter is so stupid that they won't see that this entire process that they're doing is done primarily so that they can remain in power and so that the voter has less power than they should have constitutionally.
Yeah, no, it's a great example. The only thing I would differ with you on, I think it was 25 cents you'd put in for the Coke, by the way, but that's another story there, something like that. But, you know, inflation, it's gone up indeed. Very good scenario there. I think this whole thing where they're so nervous right now, I mentioned earlier, Jim, a Hail Mary, and I ask you, are the nerves getting the best of them? So when Pelosi made the decision to go down without the transcript, without even reading or seeing what's going on, now there's a lot of talk again that this was all, well, I think you can see this was all prearranged, preordained, if you will, that it looks like Schiff may even be the whistleblower at this point. You know, it was said to me the other day, it's very interesting way here. that with all of this, you know who the real whistleblower is? You know, and this was very interesting to look at things. If you step back from all of this at 35,000 feet, you look at this, the real whistleblower on this whole catastrophe is Donald Trump. He's the whistleblower.
In the sense that he's drawing attention to it?
Yeah, you bet. He said all of this, Jim. Everything you've said, think about it in those terms. In a really interesting sort of way, he is the whistleblower. He's blowing the whistle on the entire establishment, isn't he now, on the entire deep state, on everything we've talked about, right? Isn't that what Trump's doing?
Oh, yeah. And the difference between just being a whistleblower is Trump has the power to actually do something about it if we get him elected for a second term. You know, if we don't get him elected for a second term, then what's going to happen is they're going to go, oh, we won, and it's going to be even worse.
Are you ready for President Elizabeth Warren?
Yeah. I mean, do you really want somebody telling you you can't eat with a straw? You know, I mean, are you really wanting somebody telling you that you have to call somebody Zeets instead of he or she? I mean, do you really want somebody telling you that your kid can't dress up like Mr. T at Halloween because that's cultural appropriation? Mm-hmm. It's the whole thing is just silly. Because you can't have a country like America that's a melting pot and then not have different cultures share different aspects of their culture that each one admires. Little kids in my neighborhood who want to dress up like basketball players who happen to be black or Mr. T do that because they admire that person, not because they're trying to make fun of that person. They're not wearing blackface like the Prime Minister of Canada did.
Yeah,
to make fun of a race. They're doing it because they admire those people. Yeah. And I just think it's a shame that we've gotten to the point where people take seriously this kind of nonsense. It's always been there, especially on our universities. And this is a different thought that just popped into my head, and I'm going to say it, and that is that people are whining about student loans. Well, you know, there's an excellent way for universities to reduce the probability that people will come out of a university with a worthless degree and a huge student debt, and that is to reduce their tuition. They have literally billions of dollars in legacy funds that they've collected over the years. If you want to reduce the student loan debt, the universities could take the first step and reduce their tuition. And that's where it should actually happen. But they won't be able to pay these social justice professors as much as they want to be to pay them. And they can publish these ridiculous books that they publish. If they actually reduce the cost of tuition to the value of the education that you get.
Yeah. Well, there are many ways to have the private side work in unison here and to do a lot of things, but that's not good for these people, the career path people that you point out, Jim, who are looking to empower themselves, because you pointed out something really good earlier that I talk about all the time with folks, and that is, how do these people get rich? How do they become multimillionaires many times over? Just do the math, and you don't even have to have graduated high school to figure this out. I mean, do the math quickly. I mean, their salaries don't afford them to be multimillionaires. So the payoffs and the payouts and the lobbying and all of the deals, the special interest deals, you see, this is where they have their cake and they're eating it too, which is why I say they're in Washington too long and we need some sort of term limits. I mean, the president has term limits. Why doesn't Congress? And something we keep talking about, but it doesn't happen. But I think it's time to do that because, Jim, we're never going to be able to impactfully remove a deep state if we don't start to get them in and out of there more. Don't you think?
Yes, I actually believe I'm a believer in term limits, but I see the other side of it too, because you can't have a totally, again, it's the problem is that it gives the bureaucracy more power if the new guy coming in or the new gal lady coming in doesn't know as much as the bureaucrat knows. That's the problem.
Well, Trump was that way as well. He was the unknown. Remember, right. He didn't know where the bones were buried. In fact, I remember the picture early on when he took his first trip to Washington, where he went out on the ledge there with Paul Ryan. And Paul Ryan was pointing out with the finger there in that classic picture, showing him where things were in Washington. He didn't even know the landscape.
That's true.
Oh, yeah. Right.
But he's the president of the United States.
Well,
you know, you can't have. I mean, there's got to be a balance.
What our framers wanted, though, is they wanted citizens to go to
what they wanted was conflict. That's what they wanted. What they wanted was that all of these, and see, when I see what's going on in...
Well, they got that.
What I see is going on in Washington is they wanted to distribute the power in such a way that no one group of people could take hold and without a great deal of difficulty and force new laws on us, right? And so they set it up so that there would be this adversarial relationship. And when I see this adversarial relationship, I don't ask myself, why can't they cross the aisle and work together? I think it's working the way the Constitution wanted it to work, because I'm a small government, fiscal conservative guy, and I don't want the government providing solutions for us. And if you send somebody to Washington to make rules, guess what they do? They just make rules. That's all they do. They don't change anything. They want to take your weapons. They want you to have to follow lockstep. You know, you get freedom of speech unless you want to say something they don't want to hear.
That's right.
You know, we don't want them to change that.
Well, these are the same people that talk about the classes of people. They rail against the classes of people, and that's exactly what they create, Jim.
Exactly. That's the whole point, though. The whole point is to try to divide people, because when you divide people and instigate fear, then sometimes you can get those people to vote for you in the hopes that you're going to do something about it. But as we said before, they are under no obligation and feel no obligation to keep their campaign promises. If they did, poverty among blacks would have been fixed years ago, given the number of trillions of dollars that they have paid to bureaucrats to try to make this work instead of giving it to the people who needed the money the most.
Jim, do you ever think President Donald Trump wakes up in the morning anytime here and thinks, what did he get himself into?
I actually think he enjoys the fight. You know, I really do. I think he enjoys the fight, because what I see him do is, you know, they poke at him and he pokes back, and he strikes me as a person who is at his best when he's on offense. When he's on defense, he's not at his best.
I talked about that the other day. In fact, you know, you bring up an interesting point. You know how we talk about the fact that presidents age so much in office? You know, I haven't really seen him aging much, now that you mention it.
Yeah, he doesn't. I think of him as an avatar. What I like about him is he says what I think. And he doesn't script it. You know, when a politician talks, you don't have any idea what their personal opinion is. You have absolutely no idea where they're going to vote when they leave that room, or what they're going to say to the next person they talk to. When Trump talks or tweets, you know precisely what
he does. It's that transparency, though, Jim, that is driving them all crazy.
Yeah, but it's not driving me crazy, and it shouldn't drive the voters crazy.
See, that's it. Well, that's the relationship right there. Can that happen? Now, the question is at this point, Can he stave off all of this, these confrontations and distractions that are hitting him heavy right now, Jim? Because give you another example real quickly here. He's being confronted right now on another front, too, with the New York City and state Democrat prosecutors are going after him big time in the last many days for his taxes. And the judges are ruling they want him to give up his taxes. Another thing, they're trying to find, again, a needle in a haystack, as you just described moments ago, as a perfect scenario of what they're looking for. They're always in search of a crime. Isn't that what everybody's doing right now, in search of a crime?
Yeah. Well, you know, he scared them so badly that exactly. They're doing everything that they can do to find anything to exactly. Take him down.
He's got the whole deep state running and shaking in their boots. But can he hold? Do you think he can stop this off? Can he get through this chapter, Jim? I mean, this is a big, tall order.
Well, it's up to the voters. Right. Here's what I say, that if the voters lose confidence in Trump, he won't survive. But if the voters don't lose confidence in Trump, and they make it clear to their elected officials that they either support Trump or they get the hell out of office the next time, then he will survive this thing and he'll be reelected as the president.
I love what you say there. You gave me just a burst of thought here and energy in speaking about, and it's just important for people to understand what Jim just puts out there, because no matter what we hear, no matter what the noise factor is, no matter what's going on out there, what you're saying, Jim, which is what I always say, it always comes down to we the people. And it's we the people that are going to mandate what happens next, right?
Yeah, you have those House Democrats who were elected in 2018 in red districts, right, during the midterm elections. They ought to hear from their voters. They ought to hear that you either you know, don't vote for the impeachment, or we're going to put somebody else in office the next time. They ought to hear that. They ought to know that, because the only person who has more power, really, is the collective group of voters. If you give your power up, then, you know, you deserve the government that you get. I know it sounds like a harsh thing to say, but that's absolutely the truth. You can't sit on the sidelines and then complain that things didn't go your way if you're not willing to get out and vote.
Oh, too many people do. I say get involved, get loud is my mantra here, buddy. So I hear exactly what you're saying. Do you think Pelosi puts this up for a vote?
I think she's reluctant to do that. At some point, she's going to have to, because I think that Trump is pressing her to. I think it will be a political mistake if she does. I think they're going to, you know, try to.
Will it pass when she does? Will it pass when she does? Does she have the votes?
No. I don't know whether she has the votes or not. If it does, then I would vote every one of those people out of office.
But then if that happens, you realize then it goes to the Senate. And what you described earlier, a lot of people are saying that they don't want it to go to the Senate. So how does that work?
Well, that's why they are unlikely to actually put it up for. Well, you're talking about the difference because, you know, the impeachment investigation is what should be voted on. Mm-hmm. And then once that's done, they should present it to the whole House, and the whole House has to vote for impeachment.
Exactly.
Impeaching, and then it goes to the Senate. So what I'm saying is that eventually she's going to have to.
For the inquiry.
Yeah, the inquiry.
So you don't think this goes to the Senate then?
I think it's highly unlikely, because once it goes to the Senate, the Senate's going to vote it down, find him not guilty. Then they won't have anything to, you know, he's not guilty. No. So then they won't have anything to scream about. They'll have to go back to their own worthless policies, you know, free health care for illegals, open borders, you know, nobody eats straws. They get to decide how big your soda can be. You know, that kind of stuff.
Jim, the difference in disparity of policies that you point out should be lost on nobody. I mean, it is beyond conversation that one can even understand. And you almost scratch your head, Jim, and wonder, what is the attraction to part of America that would support that kind of an agenda?
It's young people who don't know any better, that their minds have been infected in the universities by this whole business of intersectionality and socialism. You know, I went to school, you know, I was the vice president of my student government in one of the colleges that I was in. And, you know, my thinking was worthless at the time. You know, my draft number was 365, and I was glad that I wasn't going into the military. And then just a year or so later, I joined the Air Force and spent 22 years in the service, and it was the best thing I ever did in my life. Young people do not know. You know, we've been as young as the young people, but they haven't been as old as we are. I'm 68 years old. I've seen a lot of stuff in my life, and I've seen a lot of things that don't work out, that would not have worked out. All you got to do is keep in mind that the New York Times was critical of Lincoln. That's all you need to know, and you have a sense of the way the liberals think.
Yeah, we just talked about Lincoln the other day and the similarities of him and his administration as being one of the most hated presidents of all time, including and Donald Trump. The connection between 1860 and today is truly amazing. There's a lot of discussion ahead here. I appreciate and thank Dr. James Mitchell for joining us here. This is about educating we the people. That's what this is about, friends. Again, you can get Dr. James Mitchell's book on Amazon or the America Out Loud bookstore. It's there as well, Enhanced Interrogation. Friends, thank you. And always thanks for being on the mission here with us. But remember the marching orders, and I think Dr. Mitchell will agree with this. It's time to get involved and get loud.